Shalom Aleichem to everybody. It's so wonderful to be back here in town after spending close to 2 weeks in Ura's camp, The Zone. I've come back inspired, and I wanted to share with you some of the inspiration that I received over the last 2 weeks. As you're all familiar, camps this year in New York State didn't open as usual, so instead Ura ran something called the Family Zone, where they invited multiple families who they have a relationship with, families who have become inspired to live a religiously observant lifestyle. And I wanted to share with you two couples who I met, both of whom share the very same point and story with me that I think very much speaks to something that we can do as well. One individual told me that he grew up in a very orthodox religious home. His father was even a well-known rabbi. And instead of following his father's path, after 2 years of Beis Medrash, he threw in the towel and said, "I'm finished. I'm done with Torah. I'm done with mitzvot. I'm not living a religious life." He left the area and decided to marry another woman, Jewish indeed, and they both lived an incredibly secular life. He said that nobody would even imagine that they were Jewish. He was confused with others who were not Jewish at all, and nobody would have an inkling that this person was Jewish. As life took him to the next stage in retirement, he happened to have moved closer to the camp area near Albany, and it was only one word that somebody said to him: "How about coming to Shabbos? And how about spending some time at the Zone?" That he decided to reinvestigate, reconsider, and think about the life that he lived. That very short invitation, that smile, the genuineness that he was offered, allowed him to return to Yiddishkeit and to now live a regular, observant life, and how happy he is. And that, he explained to me, is all it takes. It wasn't a drasha, a shir, a philosophical point, a win, a victory that was necessary to allow him to become from and to keep Shabbos and Kashrus again, but it was simply the genuineness, the kindness, the sincerity, the invitation that he was offered that allowed him to return. Similarly, another couple who I met, an Israeli secular couple, who grew up very far from Yerushalayim, from the center of the city, from the center of the land of Israel, a secular Israeli, whose life sort of brought him from place to place, and he found himself in Philadelphia on Yom Kippur. And there was that he stumbled into a shul, and he wound up spending the entire day of Yom Kippur in that particular shul. But he told me it wasn't the tefillah, it wasn't the fasting, it wasn't the rabbi's sermon, the speech, the drasha, the people's intensity in tefillah. But it was rather the nice, kind words that people said to him. "Where are you from? What are you doing here? What's your name?" That's all it took for him to decide that he wanted to stay with these people, to be with these people, and ultimately to live a firm lifestyle. Today he still lives in Philadelphia, has an observant family, children go to the regular day schools in Philadelphia as well. But these two stories allowed me to recognize that one word is so powerful, it could breathe life and infuse mission into a person. But at the same time, it could cause death and ultimately destruction as well. And in the time period that we're living in, you can look and see throughout our history that it's actually one word, and one word only, that sealed the fate of Klal Yisrael at two epic points in our history. The first with the Meraglim, and the second with the Churban of the first Beis Hamikdash. If you look in this week's Parsha, Parsha's Dvarim, Sefer Dvarim opens up with a Musar the Tochacha, the rebuke, chastising Bnei Yisrael for a variety of the sins that they committed, and the first of which is the Chet of the Meraglim, when Klal Yisrael sent the spies to spy out the land of Israel to decide whether or not they should enter the land of Eretz Yisrael. Of course, the spies come back, and I quote the Pasuk in Parshas Shlach: "Vayisapru lo, vayomru banu al Eretz Asher Shlachtanu." The spies come back and they tell Klal Yisrael, "We went, we fulfilled our mission. We have come back on our reconnaissance mission. Zigam zavas chalav udvashi v'zeh period. The land is flowing with milk and honey." Efes, but, however, Chioz Ha'ama Yoshibarts, the people who dwell in that land are very strong. The people are big, they're large, the cities are fortressed. We're not going to be able to make it. But if you look in the Rishonim, Parsha Shlach, most prominently the Ramban asks the question, what did Klal Yisrael do so wrong? What did the spies do so wrong? They were telling the truth, they weren't lying. More than that, Moshe acquiesced to their request to enter the land of Eretz Yisrael on the spy mission. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "Shlach lecha," told Moshe, allow them to enter. What did they do so wrong? Says the Ramban, it's one word. They said one word that was inappropriate, it's the word efes. What's that word efes mean? The Ramban says it means but, however, but typically the Torah, when it wants to say however, uses the word achein. That's however. But here instead, the spies say, Efes ki'oz ha'am. Efes means, says the Ramban, and I quote, of a rishon b'milas efes. Their inappropriateness and their failure and their wickedness lied in the word efes, because efes, says the Ramban, morel davar efes, v'nimna min ha'adam. Efes was investigating and was telling the people that there's nothing that they can do. Zero, zilch, nada, efes. There's no ability for us to conquer the land, to be able to return and enter the land of Eretz Yisrael. Kiloshon ha'efes, lanetza chazdo, pasuk yitelim, which indicates the word efes means nothing. Veinod efes, elokim efes means nothing, zilch, nada. And that is the curse that Klal Yisrael did when they said that one word only, efes. And that's what sealed their fate and their punishment to sojourn in the desert for another 40 years. And of course, we all know, as the Gemara says in Maseches Tainis, that night was Tisha B'Av, Yivku Kol Ha'am B'Laila Ha'u. They cried on that night. And the Gemara tells us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded, Atem Bechisem Bechia Shalchinam. You cried for nothing. I promised you that you could enter the land of Israel. Etei Lecha Bechia L'Doros. I'll really give you something to cry about. And that night ultimately became Tisha B'Av. But it's one word, says the Ramban, the Risham, their wickedness lied in that word, Efes, nothing. And that's all it took for the ultimate punishment. Fast forward 890 years later, the Churban Bayis Risham, which took also place on Tisha B'Av, that very same evening, on that fateful night. Why did the Churban happen? And the Gemara tells us in Maseches Gittin and Daf Nun Hey on the Beis that because of one story, the well-known incident of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, the nemesis, the two people who the Gemara tells us about, an individual was throwing a party and told the shliach, told his officer, the proxy, invite my good friend Kamtza to a party. And instead the proxy invited Bar Kamtza. When the party began, he saw that Kamtza wasn't there, but it was rather Bar Kamtza was there. And that was his nemesis. And he turned to Kamtza and said, what are you doing here? And Kamtza said, I was invited. One word, the host said, poke! Get out of here! And that one word, poke, sealed the fate, says the Gemara, ultimately for the Churban. Because as the story continues, the fellow was so embarrassed, said, look, I'm already here. Just let me stay, I'll pay for my meal. What did the host respond? One word, lo. And again, the individual says, look, you don't want me to pay for my meal, I'll pay for half of the feast. And again, what did the host respond? One word, lo. And finally, out of sheer embarrassment and the inability to be able to leave, he said, okay, I won't only pay for my meal, for half the feast. I'll pay for the whole suda. And the host turns to him and again says, lo. No, get out. And that was the end. One word, poke. And another word later, lo, sealed the fate, because the Gemara tells us this individual was so embarrassed that there were rabbis at the Suda, lo michu, and they didn't rebuke the host, that he went and he slandered to the Roman government and told them that the Jews are planning to uprise in an anarchy. And as a result of that event, he went to the emperor, and the emperor sent out his troops to find out if it was true or not, and that's how the entire Churban began. So 890 years earlier, it was the one word Efes that caused Bnei Yisrael not to enter the land of Eretz Yisrael. And the Churban HaBayis all were caused because of one word as well. Poke or lo. And that one word sealed the fate of history, the Churban HaBayis. We show the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Thus we see that one word can infuse life, can breathe life into somebody. But at the same time, one word can kill, can decimate, can create friction, and can cause a building to fall down. But allow with me to share with you two more stories that speak to this point. The year was 1973. A rabbi by the name of Shlomo Riskin was giving a lecture in Miami Beach, Florida, in the Caribbean Hotel, and he was talking about the Chafetz Chaim, the great sage, the saintly Rabbi Yisrael Meir, Kohen Kagan, who died in the year 1933. And he was giving a lecture about the piety, the caring, the kindness, the scholarship of the Chafetz Chaim. And toward the end of the lecture, he decided to tell a story which he didn't know much about, but he said, look, I'll be honest, I don't know this story in totality, but I need to share with you the general story because it speaks to who the Chafetz Chaim was. There was an individual, a bachur, a teenager in the yeshiva, was caught smoking on Shabbos. And he was told by the administration to leave the yeshiva. But there was one final thing he had to do. He had to meet with the Chafetz Chaim, the head of the city, the head of the yeshiva, the deen. And he went to the Chafetz Chaim's house, spent 2 minutes with the Chafetz Chaim, and he left and he said, I could stay in the yeshiva. But nobody understood why. It was kept a secret. The boy went on, stayed in the yeshiva. That's the story. The lecture concluded. And at the end of the lecture, an elderly man came over to the rabbi, to Rabbi Riskin, and said to him, how do you know that story? He said, I don't really know the story, but I heard of it, and I'm not sure much more about it. And this elderly gentleman said to Rabbi Riskin, I'm that boy. Let me tell you the story. They walked outside and for 10 minutes in silence, he couldn't even speak. And he began to tell Rabbi Riskin that what happened to him was terrible, and he was bitterly embarrassed and shamed. What's he going to do when he enters the Chafetz Chaim's home? And the Chafetz Chaim brought him into his house. He sat him in his chair in his room. And the Chafetz Chaim held his hand and said to him one word, Shabbos. And he began to weep and cry. And a little bit later, he said to him again, Shabbos. And he began to cry. The boy left the house, went back to yeshiva. The rest is history. He went on to be a pious Jew, a law-abiding Jew, a Torah observant Jew. One word, the Chafetz Chaim said, Shabbos secured a life for this person. But if we can't do it in one word, maybe two words. And let me share with you another story from the classic work, Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust, one of my favorites, as you all know, Yaffa Eliach, on page 129, recounts the following story that took place. There was a very well-known Hasidic fellow, a Rav, a rabbi, near the town of Devinsk, the well-known Jewish city. He was a wealthy man, and he would walk regularly with his cane, his up hat, and his frock, and he would take a walk early in the morning and was very meticulous to meet everybody who he saw with a kind good morning, hello, how are you doing? He would greet everybody like the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, Amro lav al Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai shayamaktim shalom l'chol odom afilu nachri shebashuk. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the great scholar, the great Tana, the student of Hillel, was meticulously careful to greet everybody and say hello, even a non-Jew. And that's what this Hasidic rabbi did. He greeted everybody with a hello, with a good morning. But there was one particular individual. His name was Herr Mueller, who he met every morning on the outskirts of the city. And every morning he would say to him, good morning, Herr Mueller. And Herr Mueller would respond back, good morning, Herr Rabbiner. And that would happen for days, weeks, months, and years. And all later, the Holocaust came, the war came, and quickly the city was diminished, and nothing was known about this rabbi and about this Herr Mueller. The rabbi's family was killed completely in Treblinka. The rabbi was sent to Auschwitz. And it was one day that there was a selection, and the rabbi was in line. Right meant life, left meant death. And as he inched closer to the German Gestapo who would make that rule, right or left, he quickly raised his head, and I read the story. Suddenly the rabbi had a great urge to see the face of the man with the snow-white gloves, small baton, and steely voice who would play God and decide if he should live or die. He lifted his eyes and heard his own voice speaking. Good morning, Herr Mueller. Good morning, Herr Rabbiner, responded a human voice beneath the SSF cap, adorned with a skull and bones. What are you doing here? A faint smile appeared on the rabbi's lips. The baton moved to the right, to life. The following day, the rabbi was transferred to a safer camp. The rabbi, now in his 80s, told me in his gentle voice, this is the power of a good morning greeting. A man must always greet his fellow man with a good morning. One word, hello. Two words, good morning, good evening, shalom aleichem. Three words, how are you? Will allow a human being to be uplifted, to feel good about himself or herself. There's so much that we can do. There's so much that we could impact. There's so many people who could be so inspired by this little that we do. Not the shir, not the drasha, not the lumdis, not the halacha. But rather, a hello, how are you doing? Where do you come from? What's your name? I witnessed it myself with these two couples who I met these past 2 weeks at the Zone, and I'm sharing with you two contemporary stories that have been taking place as well. The words poke, the words low, were the words that created, caused, and executed the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The words Ephes, the words that were used by the Meraglim, were cured Bnei Yisrael to receive the punishment of the Chet of the Meraglim that didn't allow them to enter Eretz Yisrael. Just one word can create death, exile, decimation. And one word can allow a person to live as it did with her Rabiner. And one word can allow an individual to decide to continue. And that word was Shabbos and a tear in his eye. Let us contemplate, consider, that as we're all familiar, the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, baseless hatred. Let's use all of our energy to use Avas Chinam, love, the words that we use to say hello, good morning, good afternoon, to strike up a conversation, to invite somebody, to care about another individual, to hear somebody suffering in pain, to laugh with somebody, or to smile with somebody doesn't cost us a nickel or a dime. But that's all it takes. Let's use these next 9 days to make sure that we can powerfully create a riveting Kiddush Hashem, to inspire others, to uplift others, to smile, to say hello, to unconsciously and consciously speak and to breathe Kiddush Hashem, Avas Hashem, Avas Chinam, to uplift others, inspire others, and may that be all it takes to ultimately bring back, return the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi, Shibane Beis HaMikdash, B'mheirav Yemenu, wishing each and every single one of you a wonderful Shabbos, all the best, wonderful to be back, have a great Shabbos.